So today's topic is Swami Brahmananda, a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna. We are going to celebrate the birth anniversary of this great Swami, who was born in the 19th century and who was an eminent disciple of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Now, there are many interesting aspects about this this Swami, Swami Brahmananda. The most interesting aspect of his personality was he was always immersed in the thought of God. So when I use the word God, I often take care to emphasize the Vedantic concept of God. You don't always think that God is it in your heart in many traditions. But in Vedantic tradition, the highest ideal, the highest idea of God is one all-pervading divine reality that is present everywhere and that is present in the hearts of all spiritual seekers. There is a statement in the Bhagavata Purana, but it says, put in modern American language, my residential address is in the hearts of devotees. Yoginam Kridaye Bhavati, that's the statement Lord Krishna says. There are many wonderful places where I would like to live, in a temple, marble and gold, in a church, in a synagogue, you spend billions of dollars and there are many of the temples and cathedrals and churches were built spending a huge amount of money, and it took sometimes 2-3 centuries. Angkor Wat took 350 years for completion of the huge temple city. But the most prominent devotion classic of Vedanta tells you that the most wonderful residential address of God is in the heart of Yoginam Kridaye. It means, Kridaya means the inner recess, the inner chamber of our being. That's the meaning. It's not heart as we understand in medical science. It is the very essence, the inner essence of our being. That's where I am living. So this is a declaration in the Bhagavata Purana. Now this Swamiji was always meditating on God, residing in his own heart and in the hearts of everyone. And at the same time, he had to shoulder the huge responsibility of this monastic organization, which was at that time expanding. After Vivekananda passed away in 1902, the mantle of running this Ramakrishna organization, which today has got more than 200 centers spread around the world, this Swami was in charge. And he was always contemplating on God. Most of the time, if you see his photos and pictures, you find him sitting straight with closed eyes. And he was running this huge organization. Not only that, he was running it very well. Without going through any former course in management science, he was managing it so very well. And so that's the most striking aspect of Swami Brahmananda from a modern perspective. I would say modern perspective because it is the age of management science. So that's what I'm going to begin with. So now, you find in the lives of great saints and epoch makers, when they evolve in their spiritual life, they develop a unique kind of efficiency. That efficiency is not what we call professionalism. It's not the skill of a management expert. It is not the skill involved in extracting the best from every employee, you know. So you find if you give them 3 meals every day, they will work harder. And if you have the Wi-Fi attached to the bus in which they are traveling, they will work longer hours. So you can extract more. That's the modern management science. Or if you undergo a training program, $500 per session, and if the marketing executive is falling below his efficiency level, then he is supposed to undergo some kind of an informal training for which he has spent a huge amount of money. And one important exercise involved is repeating to himself, "I shall succeed 100 times. So when you do that, some of the inner potential, higher efficiency will start unfolding. That's what they say in management psychology. Now, this has nothing to do with that kind of management science, where you're trying to extract everything from everyone. When you evolve in spiritual life, you evolve a special skill, and that skill gives you a peep into the hearts of all others. It's not, again, I shall tell you, it's totally different from what we understand in modern times. It's not that you please somebody, make a person happy so that he will work harder. See, in Dale Carnegie's public speaking and making friends in business, he deals with a very wonderful thing. I don't think it is practiced these days. So he says, when you negotiate with a rival company, rival executive, and you should know what are the areas in which the other person may be interested. Suppose the person you are negotiating with is interested in soccer or American football or baseball, then you draw his attention to that topic. Then you find out who is his favorite player. Then you also pretend to be a great fan of that player. So you are establishing a kind of rapport. And then the whole negotiation can function very smoothly. But so when this point was discussed in a platform, somebody asked during Q&A, what about the person who has also read Dale Carnegie? The person you are negotiating with may also have read that particular thing. So he'll find out what you're actually trying to do. So it won't work. So cleverness, skill, efficiency, professionalism, all these skills that you develop through training, intellectual training, professional training, mechanical training, all these have one flaw. Raise the other person's consciousness to a higher level and make him understand the need to work with unity and efficiency. Now, I am going to read a very interesting episode from Swami Brahmanandaji's life. So, in that book dealing with Swami Brahmananda, it is from one of the well-known books. Karma Yoga is inscrutable. It is a wonderful path for purifying the mind. But if it is not performed in the right spirit, it breeds ego, power struggles, bickering and dissension, and bitterness. So in Varanasi is one of the holy cities in India, Kasi it is called. In Varanasi, the Ramakrishna Advaita Ashrama and the home of service are located side by side. One is a regular monastery, the other one is a hospital run by the Ramakrishna order. So Swami Brahmananda happened to hear about some problem going on in a huge institution, you know, just two wings. Naturally, there will be difficulties, you know, even among monks also, there can be problems of, you know, difference of opinions. This is the subject we are going to deal with. How this Swami dealt with this problem, with a unique skill. So in Varanasi, the Ramakrishna Advaita Ashrama and the home of service are located side by side. Some untrained monks of both centers formed rival groups and started to quarrel among themselves, among some views how to run the hospital or maybe different departments, you know. Swami Turiyananda, who was incidentally here in San Francisco, he was the one who started our first Vedic monastery in the Shanti Ashrama. That's 100 miles, nearly 100 miles away from here. And Sharadananda tried to reconcile their differences but failed. Swami Brahmananda was then at Bhubaneswar, a few hundreds of miles away from Varanasi. When he was informed of the situation, he replied, "Don't do anything right now. I am going to see for myself." So Swami Brahmananda happens to visit this place. See, that's what we are going to deal with, we will hear about. On 20th January 1921, the Swamiji Brahmanandaji arrived in Varanasi. So the novices were all scared to death. He was the president of the order. But he was not, there was nothing, I mean, intimidating about him. A man who was always contemplating on God, practically you find he spoke very little and he very rarely he took any harsh measures. But everything went on smoothly. How he accomplished this? You know, the reason why I am mentioning this is frequently we believe that we can solve all problems through efficiency, skill, and, well, if you don't mind using the word cleverness, or what you call still going as one step below smartness. But it doesn't work. The other person also may be clever and even smarter. So the problems don't get solved. Again, efficiency and smartness. When it exceeds 108 degrees, then it is coming towards yourself. It becomes a liability. The smartest persons in the world were not always successful. Think of Hitler, Napoleon, Genghis Khan. You don't tell me that they were not smart. But you don't say they were successful. Even Alexander the Great. They were smart in the sense they had developed certain skills and efficiency, certain ways of doing things, organizing things, getting things done. But they were certainly not successful in the final sense, the ultimate sense of that term. Because eventually, their efficiency, their smartness became a liability. As I mentioned, if you think of a cycle, well, after you reach the other end, then it is coming towards you. Your cleverness, your efficiency become a problem for you. The highest degree of efficiency, smartness, and cleverness become liabilities. But there is a different way, a higher way, but a spiritual way of managing problems. That's what we are witnessing in Swami Brahmanandaji's life. So on 20th January 1921, Swami Brahmananda arrived in Varanasi. And many were fearing that the Swami would punish some of them who were quarreling among themselves. He did not call any meeting, as we normally do. We call a meeting of people and try to explain. But that doesn't work because they have their own views, you know. So he did not call any meeting or raise any question regarding work or quarrels. He simply announced that all the monks from both the centers would have to meditate with him in the morning and evening, and that there would be a devotional singing and questions and answers after meditation. There'll be, you find, I have myself experienced this, There'll be a lot of difference between the kind of questions you ask before meditation and after meditation. So meditation actually teaches us to ask the right kind of questions in the right kind of way. So this a few days passed. So Swamiji had told all of them, every day morning and evening we will sit, do some devotional music and meditate little. Thus a few days passed. Then on Swamiji's birthday, Swami Vivekananda's birthday, he initiated some 40 members of the ashramas into sannyasa. They were all getting ready. They were undergoing training for several years for ordination into sannyasa, means mendicancy, full-fledged mendicancy. He lifted their minds to such a high level that they forgot all their friction. So in spiritual life, in this process of raising somebody's consciousness, you do not solve problems, you do not answer questions. Problems cease to be problems and questions cease to be questions. When you find an answer from within yourself, then you no longer consider the problems to be such serious problems or the questions to be worth asking or discussing. That's what happens. As we evolve, you can very easily understand in normal human life, in the process of biological evolution. A child may quarrel, fight. Children may fight among themselves maybe they may quarrel for chocolates. Children may quarrel for toys when they are tiny babies. When they grow up, they don't do that. It's not because they have no problems. They may have the problems, but they do not consider these toys or chocolates worth fighting for, quarreling for. Like that, as we evolve in our spiritual life, we leave the earlier stages behind and there are no more questions. Not because questions get answered, but questions cease to be questions. They are no longer questions worth discussing. So, a unique insight into the psychology of human mind, knowledge of human psychology and human mind, and a unique kind of total unselfishness. Total unselfishness, you know, that gives you special power. When you're totally unselfish, you don't take the trouble to please somebody or you feel a need to fear somebody. So this insight into the mysteries of human mind is far beyond knowledge and skills and information is attained by a saint, and then he's able to raise the consciousness level of other people. This is a classic example that you find in Swami Brahmananda's life. So, and the author of this book goes on explaining further that they all became, those who were suffering from problems of friction and inner quarrels, they became role model saints in course of time. Now, this is something that we cannot study from books or scriptures or even by discussion can help in a big way. When you discuss these ideas with some spiritually elevated people, you get that a higher wisdom is transmitted to you. That wisdom it doesn't happen at the intellectual level. It happens at a deeper level. So this is an interesting example. Now, one way to develop this unique skill is, according to Swami Brahmananda, what he calls holy company. Holy company should not miss it. It's not a company or anything. Association with good people, put in simple language. Associating with people whose contact will give you a kind of inner peace and serenity. There are, in fact, in the in some of our scriptures, Yoga Sutra and also other scriptures, there are very wonderful statements. He says, Ishare tadadhineshu baliseshu dhishasuja prema maitri kripa ubeksha yakkarodi samadhimaha. So, four methods of dealing with people, either in the workplace, in home, or in different social situations. After all, we interact with people. We cannot interact with people without some way or other being influenced by them. There is no doubt about it. Even if we think, well, I won't care for what he says, still the hearing, even the attitude, well, I heard something, but I won't care for what he says. Even that attitude indirectly will have its influence in our mind. So people whom you meet, whom you associate with, belong to different categories. All of them may not be the kind of people with whom you may actually like to associate. And you may know very well that this is in everyday life. It happens to everyone. So our scriptures lay down certain methods by which we can have the best out of every kind of association. So there are four approaches mentioned in this book. One is, well, some of these, the earlier prema, maitri, kripa, ubeksha. You should have devotion to a higher spiritual ideal, God or whatever it is. Higher spiritual ideal. Then we should have a sense of friendship, a harmonious, friction-free association with other people who may be spiritual seekers like us, or who may be good people like us. People who, with whom we associate, and as a result, when you go home, you feel, oh, it's wonderful, I had a wonderful time. It means a kind of inner serenity. There are many, if you in normal life, workplace, in different life situations, you may come across many people who are not very different from you. They may also be looking for higher spiritual ideas. And they may also feel the same when you associate with them. You feel the same when you come in contact with them. Both it happens. So we should have a sense of friendship towards fellow spiritual seekers. Then there are those who may not have an occasion, an opportunity to connect with or to be associated with spiritual ideas or spiritual persons. So you should have contempt with them, for them, or you should not belittle them or look down upon them. Rather, we should have a sense of not sympathy in the sense you are a big person, another person, not that way, a kind of compassion, understanding, attitude towards such people who may be looking for spiritual ideas from people like you. Then there are those, suddenly you may come across many people in different life situations who may, you may suddenly feel that they are more advanced than you. We should not have a sense, a kind of jealousy or envy, or a kind of lack of toleration or appreciation. Rather, we should have a sense of appreciation for those who possess qualities that we ourselves want to develop for ourselves. And that when we admire qualities in others, good qualities, we automatically develop those qualities in ourselves. So if you are a great fan of great scholars, for example, who have dedicated their whole lifetime, let us say, for scientific experiments, philosophical studies, mystical studies, if you have a great admiration for them, there is every chance that one day you may end up being a philosopher or a scholar. You can easily have little children who watching this football, and they may have their fans among these players, and one day it's possible that they end up being a player. Children who become admirers of musicians Well, they will try, you can see this happening in their infancy. They will tune, they will sing to themselves. And in the end, they may end up being musicians. So qualities that we admire in others, good qualities, without jealousy, without bitterness. If we admire qualities in other people, it has a direct effect. We start developing those qualities. It's a fact. If we contempt people who have more of those qualities or skills than ourselves, then our own skill may go down. It functions both ways. That's a very interesting psychological point. So prema, maitri, kruva. So that means a kind of admiration for others. Then the fourth category, that's very important. There are people whose association, you may talk with them for a long time. When they talk, you were highly excited. What a wonderful man. He speaks so rationally. But after going back, when you meditate, when you pray, suddenly some doubts, skepticism will arise. Because your association with this person have sowed the seeds of doubt and skepticism and bitterness in your mind. Keep a long distance from them. That is upeksha. It doesn't mean that physically you can keep away from them. No, may not be possible. Your boss, your comrades, your subordinates or your friends may belong to that category. You should not hate them. We should not hate anyone, because if we hate anyone, if we dislike anyone, if you have prejudiced feeling towards anyone, it will have a spiritually damaging effect in our own mind, because it sows the poison seed in our heart. So we should be careful to avoid that. But then you have to save your skin. You have to survive. For that, what do? You develop a unique kind of filtering mechanism. You filter, if you filter something, you get the good liquid will fall in a cup and the rest you throw away. Not in their presence. So you listen to them, but in your own mind, we must have a unique kind of filtering mechanism. Filter out what is undesirable, what is unwanted, what is to be thrown out. So this filtering mechanism is something that we develop when we practice, when we do spiritual practices. Along with this unique skill, this insight into the human mind, you also develop a natural tendency to filter out all the poisonous ideas that may try to accumulate in our mind. It can happen from magazines, it can happen from newspapers, it can happen from the internet, and also through associations with people whose association may poison our mind. What is meant by poison to the mind? Skepticism, disbelief, shaking our own convictions. We may have some sacred ideas we consider to be very important, upon which our life is built. Prayer, meditation, certain ideas with the parables of Jesus, the ideas from Bible, Bhagavad Gita, Vedas, Buddhist Dhammapada, any of these great world spiritual ideas. You have read and you have developed a kind of a sense of the sacred sanctity towards these ideas. And if somebody whose words throw cold water on all this, how to interact, how to filter out? Mentally, we know these are not good for us. Should not tell him on the face, because that may create problems in the office, in the university, or in the workplaces. But it's an internal process. This unique filtering mechanism is a natural byproduct of spiritual evolution. Just like the unique skill that Swami Brahmananda developed. So Swami Brahmananda ji, this interesting conversation which I am going to quote from, it is from a very wonderful book, The Eternal Companion, Spiritual Teachings of Swami Brahmananda. Turning the mind to God is the title. A disciple is asking a question. Sir, how can we turn our mind to God? Swami says, by keeping company with the wise and good, the wise and the good, by observing their daily actions and living them in your own life, you can turn your mind to God. You are to imitate the ways and manners of those who have their minds turned to God. In the Bhagavad Gita, you find in the second chapter, Arjuna, the student, the disciple, puts one question to Krishna, the teacher. It begins like this, you know, Sthidapragnasi kabhasa samadhistasi keshiva sthidikim prabhashidakim asidavrajedakim. So what are the characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person? In short. Then Lord Krishna says, prajakadiyada kaman sarvan parthamanogada. In 18 verses, Lord Krishna gives a list of the characteristics. Remember, external, mostly external characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person. Now, Shankaracharya, who is responsible for popularizing Bhagavad Gita as a world spiritual classic, he asks one question, then he gives the answer. Why should Lord Krishna give a list of characteristics? What's the use of it? Then Shankaracharya says, these signs, these characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person are given with one very, very important purpose. The purpose is, these are the natural characteristics of a spiritually enlightened person. But these are the characteristics which we must try to slowly evolve and develop in our life. If a child asks the father, what are the characteristics of a strong man or strong woman for that matter? He may tell he will have huge muscles. He would look like some kind of, you know, world wrestling, that sort of, you know, sumo wrestler. Certainly not, the child won't try to imitate him, if you put it that way. A sumo wrestler may not be an ideal physical form for a child to admire. Anyway, a child will ask, what are the characteristics of a strong man? He will say he has huge bulging muscles and so on. The child may try to develop those things. He will go to gymnasium. That's the purpose. I want muscles like that. In course of time, he may become a strong person. So if you develop, not blind imitation, not make-believe, remember. Not make-believe. If we really develop those qualities within our own mental system, eventually we will develop those qualities and will become spiritually enlightened. That's what happens. So, the great barrier obstructs your correct vision of God is the doubt and confusion and bitterness and skepticism of the mind. That's a very interesting, important thing in spiritual life. Reading, listening to lectures, attending prayers, these are all very wonderful, very important and very useful. But along with that, there's one very important thing needed, associating with people who are already in the field. Because that will prompt you to develop certain skills which may help you. So unless you associate with spiritually enlightened people, you will not really believe that God is real. Even the most pious person, you write on a piece of paper, what is my religion? I'm a Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, and so on. That's only a piece of paper and a little ink. Nothing more. Or just blowing hot air, words. But this word or this verbal expression becomes a real experience when we meet people or when we discuss with people who have a little bit of this experience. So that's the only thing that completely removes the inner skepticism and doubt. Otherwise, there is always some doubt. So you find Sri Ramakrishna's disciples and Sri Ramakrishna himself, Whenever spiritual seekers approach them, what they used to tell them, the common instruction was, you pray to God, you pray to Mother. That's the instruction. You don't find them giving the, you go and listen to some lectures, no. Of course, Sri Ramakrishna used to ask his disciples to go to men like Kesava Chandra Sen, some great devotees. That's because meeting those spiritual seekers would help you to get an idea of what it means to progress or to live a spiritual life. But words themselves are not substitute for real experience. But words are important. You should read books. We must listen to lectures, participate in programs, because all these are different ways of feeding our mind with healthy spiritual food. And that will help us to make proper use of holy company. So when you associate with spiritual persons, even to understand, to be sensitive to that association, we need a mind that is willing to do, that's ready for that. And for that, we have to feed our mind with the spiritual ideas. So Swami Brahmananda says, the great barrier and that obstructs your correct vision of God is the doubt and confusion, bitterness, skepticism. And there is a one play of the mind involved in this. You know, frequently we ask questions. We ask for more explanation when we do not really want to believe. When you read a Trader Joe's packet, written the ingredients, how can you believe it's really true? You have not seen that happening, but you believe that. But if somebody tells you God is real, I want a proof for it. There are many things that we believe that we have not seen and no way of verifying for ourselves. So frequently, the mind may try to play a trick. The mind will ask for more proof when it doesn't really want to believe. That is true of many of the modern atheists and agnostics. They don't ask questions with regard to many things for which they can never find a proof. They want a proof to believe in what they really do not want to believe. So it's a play of the mind. So this inner duplicity, I won't call it hypocrisy, is too strong a word to use, though I may not be totally wrong if I use it. Now, this inner trick that mind plays, it all disappears when we associate with people whose association will help us to remove this skepticism. That's a big thing. But remember, it doesn't mean that if we cannot completely believe, it doesn't mean anything. We have to remember, people with who can intellectually believe the reality of God and spiritual ideas, they themselves have progressed a lot, because they may not have experienced it, but intellectual conviction itself is a proof that their mind is, that they have an evolved mind. Even intellectual conviction doesn't come unless we have evolved and traveled some distance. You can try that by giving a lecture on spiritual subject in the general public. They will run away from it. If you give a topic on something very eye-catching, very rudimentary, very empirical, very worldly, there will be a huge audience. If you talk about, even not to speak of Jesus, Buddha, or Sri Ramakrishna, Shankaracharya, if you talk about Kant and Hegel, how many people will you find ready to listen? No, not many. Why? Because intellectually, many are not evolved. So what I mean to say, even to be able to withstand the assault of great ideas, sublime ideas, high philosophy, high mysticism, we require a degree of spiritual, psychological evolution and refinement. So we should remember very well, Swami Brahmanandaji is not belittling the importance of scriptures, the importance of debates, discussions, ideas, not at all. What he says is, we should remember there is a higher level that we must try to reach beyond intellectual conviction. So intellectual conviction is needed, is very important, but there is a higher level where what you believe in becomes a matter of reality in our everyday life. That's an important point to remember. So even if you believe intellectually, there'll be still some skepticism and doubt that may linger on in the mental world. That also will disappear when we associate with people spiritual life. And we contemplate mentally more and more on these thoughts. What happens? At some point, we may get a glimpse of the higher transcendental reality. So that's the important message that we have to remember. I shall speak a few more very interesting messages. There is one point Vishwami Brahmanandaji used to explain, the danger of faith becoming mechanical. I mean, practice, even mechanical practices have their use, their usefulness, their importance. But real faith, real spiritual practice can become more effective and fruitful when they become more natural. So there is taking the name of God and at the same time keeping your clothes untouched by water. So you need not bother about yourself anymore, but you should resign yourself in the right spirit. You should not do it with a doubting heart. This is a higher conviction, higher faith, where all skepticism is completely gone. So he says you should not do it with a doubting mind. It's like taking the name of God and at the same time keeping your clothes untouched by water. So there is an interesting story behind this, which originally comes from the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. That's what I'm going to read now. This reference is to Sri Ramakrishna's parable of the milkmaid and the Brahmin priest. You find many such stories in the lives of some of the saints in Christian mystical tradition, in Russian mystical tradition, and so on, where suddenly a humble person throws light on some spiritual truths, which professional priests, preachers may not be fully aware of. So you can find a very interesting parable here. You find many parables in Jesus Christ Bible, you find. A milkmaid used to supply milk to a Brahmin priest living on the other side of the river. So this milkmaid used to carry milk. The Brahmin priest had to do some rituals for that. She used to supply milk. But every day she had to cross a river. Owing to the irregularities of boat service, she could not deliver the milk punctually every day. Once, being rebuked for her delay, the poor woman said, "What can I do, sir? I have to wait a long time for the boatman." The priest said, "Woman, people cross the ocean of life by uttering the name of God. And can't you cross this little river?" The priest didn't mean, I don't know what. That's what every professional clergyman will do. The humble man or woman sitting on the audience, any tradition, if all religious tradition, may take it more seriously and may go deeper into the teachings of this preaching. You heard of the great pilgrim, humble peasant pilgrim in the way of a pilgrim. He listened to a sermon on the first epistle of St. Paul, which deals with Jesus' prayer, how to remain spontaneously always in a state of prayerfulness. That's a topic. And this humble, he was almost illiterate, but he could somehow read and write. This man, this peasant, Russian peasant, listened to a sermon. It really happened. It is a historical fact. And this is narrated in The Way of a Pilgrim, which is an autobiography of a humble Russian peasant pilgrim. So this man listened to the clergyman, talking about remaining in a state of perpetual prayerfulness. He may not have meant what he said, God knows. But the peasant took it very seriously. And he left his home and he wanted to go to Jerusalem. He wanted to go on a pilgrimage. And he had to walk maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of miles. Russia is a huge country. And while traveling, he was looking for somebody who could teach him this art of remaining in a state of perpetual prayerfulness, as St. Paul deals with in the first episode. So finally, he found a Russian Orthodox monk who taught him how this spiritual practice. And that made him a saint. So sometimes a humble person listening, sitting in an audience, may read deeper meaning into the words of a sermon. So that's what happened in this case. The priest told this humble woman, you have problem crossing the river every day, but there are people who cross the ocean of samsara, ocean of worldliness, but taking the name of God, and you cannot cross this river every day. That is a statement from the priest. But the woman took it very seriously because she was not clever enough to intellectually understand the superficiality of the statement. Statement itself is profound, but it was made in a very superficial way. But the woman took it very seriously, like the Russian person did the way of a pilgrim. The simple-hearted woman believed the priest, and from the next day, she began to cross the river uttering God's name. One day, the priest asked her why she was never late as before. The woman replied, I crossed the river by uttering the name of the Lord as you asked me to do. The woman took it and really implemented the program, so to speak. The priest could not believe this and wanted to see himself how the woman crossed the river. The woman took him with her and began to walk over the water, repeating the name of the Lord. But looking behind, she saw the priest following timidly, holding up his clothes. The woman looked back. How is it, sir, that you are uttering the name of the Lord, but at the same time you are trying to keep your clothes dry? Because the priest was not very sure that his own statements really will work. But the woman didn't have the intellectual skepticism. So what meanings? One is, unless you find rustic simplicity, childlike purity of mind, work miracles. Sometimes intellectual accomplishments can be a barrier. In fact, the statement comes from maybe one of the greatest intellectuals the world has ever produced any time, if not the greatest, according to Sister Nivea, the greatest. Shankaracharya himself says, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Govindam, Bhaja Mudhamati. And he makes one of people who spend their whole lifetime studying rules of Sanskrit grammar. He was himself the greatest Sanskrit scholar of all time. If an illiterate man says, I won't care to go to school, you may not believe it. Because Harvard professor himself tells you, Einstein tells you, well, physics is wonderful. There are many things that physics cannot solve. You may believe it. So that's what Shankaracharya says. So you find Swami Brahmananda making such great statements, taking the name of God. So whatever spiritual practice we do, it should be done with a totality of dedication. And this totality of dedication or that degree of dedication or honest faith comes slowly. We should never get away with the impression that, well, I read scriptures, but I cannot fully believe, so I won't read scriptures. That is wrong. It's like a child says, well, I'm not going to be an Einstein, so I won't go to kindergarten. He'll remain illiterate. It is so. What the preachers, the scriptures tell you, you need scriptural statements, you need great prayers, but the greatest of these prayers also will tell you, you should go beyond these mechanical practices. Mechanical practices done with sincerity will one day tell you that you should go beyond mechanical practices. Sincere faith will take a person beyond faith and will take him to the realm of experience. So, I shall try to say a few more things from Swami Brahmanandaji's life. The holy company you keep, the spiritual talk you hear, all make an impression on your mind. Therefore, the effect of holy company and the effect of spiritual conversation is infallible. So, while pointing out the limitation of intellectual achievements, Swami Brahmanandaji also emphasizes the need for feeding our mind with higher ideas by holy company. What is holy company? Holy company should be taken in a broad perspective. Any association with spiritual ideas. If you go to San Francisco Library and take a wonderful book and read, spend one hour reading that, that is actually holy company. If you read a book from like a Dhammapada, you are keeping yourself in the company of Buddha for 1 hour. If you read Bhagavad Gita, you are living in the company of Lord Krishna for 1 hour. If you read a parable, Sermon on the Mount, you are living in the company of Jesus for 1 hour, if you read. They may be thousands of years apart. Because those ideas, which they preached and taught and meditated upon, contemplated upon, thousands of years back, they remain still alive in the air. When we raise our mind, our consciousness level, to a higher level and try to connect with those ideas enter our mind. See, it's all everywhere there. When you open the mind with a sincere desire to study and understand these great ideas, then they all come back to our mind because they are already accumulated. That's why Swami Brahmanandaji emphasizes the importance of making pilgrimages. So, for example, there is one pilgrim center in India. It's called Kankan. It's called Haridwar. It's on the foot of the Himalayas. You start climbing the Himalayas from that point. So, this place is mentioned in many of the ancient scriptures. Bhagavata Purana mentioned, all the Vedic literature, many of the holy scriptures mentioned this place. It's called Haridwar or Haridwar. Both names are equally correct. Dwara means opening the door. I mean, Hari means God. The door that opens to the path leading to God. That's Haridwar means. So there is there's a particular place, small locality in Haridwar. It's called Kankal, where Ramakrishna Mission established a big hospital to cure the diseases, illnesses of poor people in the beginning of 20th century. And it was Swami Vivekananda who instructed one of his disciples to go there and start a hospital. That hospital is still flourishing, big hospital. About that place, that Haridwar, Swami Brahmananda writes, about Kankal, Haridwar, Swami Brahmanandaji remarked, it's a holy place. Here it does not take much effort to be absorbed in japa and meditation, taking holy name and meditation. The very atmosphere is wonderful. The presence of the Mother Ganges and the majestic Himalayas make the mind calm spontaneously. The unobstructed sound of Om is always vibrating in the air. He said about Varanasi, Kashi. Kashi is beyond the universe, a great place saturated with consciousness. A person gets 10 times the results if he practices spiritual disciplines here, and the mantra becomes living very quickly. What it means is a holy place is called a holy place because it accumulates a huge collection of holy vibrations. When we discuss spiritual ideas in this hall, the vibrations of this hall will be different from the vibration in the street. So when we if you sit in a room and if you chant whatever tradition you may be born into, any tradition, with a sincere heart, if you chant, if you think or speak or discuss spiritual ideas, those ideas will become vibrations, and those vibrations never get lost. These vibrations make a place holy. So what Brahmananda says, if you go to such a holy place, even if you are not spiritually advanced, the holiness of the place will raise your consciousness level. In proportion to our sincerity, the prevailing atmosphere, the vibrations, will raise our own level of consciousness to a higher level. So if holy persons live in a place for thousands of years, generations of holy persons, and holy thoughts are discussed, that place accumulates these vibrations. So those who do spiritual practices in such place, they find concentration, all this becomes easy. In fact, that is a very spiritual psychology behind pilgrimages and pilgrim centers. Our awareness and our sense of sanctity and sacredness with which we approach the subject, that's a deciding factor in getting the benefit of pilgrimages. If you go to a pilgrim center, see Varanasi, if you go, its streets are among the most narrow streets even in India. Streets go back to 3,000, 4,000 years. So you don't expect freeways here. So if you go there, all dirty streets. Sometimes there will be dogs and cows in the middle of the street you find. But I have seen myself, Westerners, Europeans and Americans, often with Rudrakshas, not caring for, there is not hygienic. No, they won't bother. They will be looking, walking and all that. We don't know why. So what is that which captures? If you go to Taj Mahal, arguably supposed to be one of the most beautiful buildings in the world, supposed to be, you don't go and meditate in Taj Mahal. Marble, wonderful marble floor, you don't meditate. But if you go to these streets or small, tiny temples of Varanasi with the very narrow streets, with cows all around, you meditate. How is it possible? It depends upon our perspective, what we are looking for. In fact, the whole world is like that. In a bigger sense, the whole world is a temple. Depending upon our mental makeup, we take from the world and we give to the world. That's what happens. So, of course, at some point, this inner connection is felt. Not every time, not for everyone. I can tell you about Paul Deussen. What about Max Muller? Another example. Born a German by birth, lived in Oxford in England, spent all his lifetime, was commissioned by the church to translate Vedas so that Hindus will understand what absolute nonsense Vedas are and they will all become Christians. That is the hope. But Max Muller started reading the Vedas and never looked back, spent the rest of his lifetime, not only he but his wife also, 45 years, only for studying and reading the Vedas. Became a devotee of the Vedas, not a student of Vedas. And Vivekananda met him in Oxford. And Swami Vivekananda possibly imagined he must have gone to India many times. Maximally, I had not gone to India. But he was living in India mentally. Then why? If I go, you'll have to bury me there. I won't come back. This is 19th century, mind you. So that's true of all holy places. You are Lourdes. Many of the holy cathedrals, churches, synagogues, Buddhist temples, anywhere in the world where holy persons have lived and thought holy thoughts, spoken holy words, become holy. Tirthi kurvandi tirthani. So that is a sachchatri kurvandi shastrani. It's a statement in Narada's Bhakti Sutras, a devotional classic. It says, holy persons make places holy. That's the idea behind. So you find this phenomenon happening in many traditions, in many religious traditions, great mystics, great saints, in Europe or in Russia, in Russian mystical tradition, in India or Buddhist monks in China, you find many places still continue because these vibrations don't die. If we cannot feel, it's our problem. So that's why Swami Brahmanandaji says, Kashi is beyond the universe, a great place saturated with consciousness. A person gets 10 times the result if he practices spiritual disciplines here, and the mantra becomes living very quickly. So, he's a very interesting personality, Swami Brahmanandaji. Interesting because he was always contemplating on God, merged in God consciousness. And he had to play many roles, multiple roles, the role of a teacher, the role of the head of a big organization. And he did all this with marvelous skill, and the skill not acquired in a university, but a skill that was the result of a unique spiritual personality. Spiritual progress, spiritual practices will give you a deep insight into the human mind, the mechanism of the human mind. As I mentioned earlier, raising the level of consciousness of the other person. That's the method. It's totally different from modern management science. Dale Carnegie possibly wouldn't understand that, you know, I mentioned earlier. So it is not superficial diplomatic skill. Rather, when he solved the problems, he did so by raising the level of consciousness of all involved, all the people involved. So those of you who are interested can read this wonderful book, The Eternal Companion, Spiritual Teachings of Swami Brahmananda. It is a very unique one. A small book, not a very large work. It's a very wonderful collection of spiritual ideas. Thank you. Namaskar. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Tat Sat. Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.